No one at any level of importance will ever be able to say, I've never heard of you. And so my only goal was I will become the most well-known figure in Hollywood. How does Oprah Winfrey know what is she going to do today? And it seems like whoever's telling Oprah what she's going to do today, it must be the person who's telling Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks too, because the next day they're all in the same place.
Right.
All these things that a person said, well, what has Gatsby done? Gatsby didn't do it, but actually I have.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
right.
I'm in theaters on Friday.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Jay-Z and Beyonce is actually in my movie.
Right.
Like, actually, the ironic thing is, at the end of this movie, the climax scene is I'll walk into Vanity Fair's Oscar party with the Oscar that's not mine.
Yep.
But this actual movie has actually been up for an Oscar.
What's going on, people? This is your boy, Michael O, your chief motivational officer. Listen, I am excited to bring you a brand new podcast, Moving Mountains, hosted by myself. Find me on Spotify, find us on iTunes, find us on YouTube. Connect with us, Moving Mountains Podcast.
What's good, people? Welcome to another episode of the Moving Mountains Podcast. I am your host, Michael O. Welcome to another gem-packed episode. You know me, I like to bring you practical tools that you can apply to your life right now to help you level up, to help you get to your goals. And my guest today, oh my goodness, I'm loving these Hollywood guys on the show, you know, because they come with nothing but gems. They come with life experience. My guest today is the definition of fake it till you make it. Let me tell you a little bit about my guest today. He has the most incredible story ever. He created an alter ego and turned himself into a Hollywood celebrity, a self-manifested celebrity. He literally manifested the life that he once wanted, and he made a movie about it, a documentary about his own life, and it features everyone from Jay-Z to Beyonce to President Bill Clinton to Kanye West to Kim Kardashian to Jeff Bezos, literally the who is who's of Hollywood, and it's absolutely incredible. It reminds me of this quote from Paulo Coelho in The Alchemist, which says, when you truly want something, all the universe conspires in helping you achieve it. And my guest today, Gatsby Randolph, as he goes by, is the real depiction of this. And it's been working for him. So I'm so happy to have you on the show. Gatsby, welcome. Welcome.
Oh, man,
to the
appreciate that.
Listen,
appreciate
bro,
that.
Your story is so fucking incredible. And I cannot wait for you to unravel it. Literally, we met the other night and you were just talking. And for a good 45 minutes, I was literally just quiet. Everybody on the table was literally sucked into your journey because it's fucking brilliant, bro. How you feeling?
That.
Welcome to Dubai.
Man, thanks for having me. I'm going to take my glasses off a little bit.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm feeling the same thing, to be fair. Let's do that.
Just because that intro was so great and formal, I want to give you the proper respect.
I feel you.
No, I'm glad to be in Dubai, man. This thing is all happening. And, you know, I think on a layman's terms, as we look at like people like to categorize something, like how do we what do we label this? What do we call this?
Yeah.
And what I'm doing right now in life is like I'm flipping these norms of slang and I'm giving them the same terms of endearment but different meanings. So like for instance, like the N-word, like it was like one point in Hollywood, like we just all of us decided, like, I'm going to stop saying the N-word and say king. So every time I say, yo, the N-word, I'll be like, yo, what up, king?
Yeah.
My king, right? So one thing I'm going to do, it would even a term fake it till you make it, you dream it till you real life it.
Come on.
You know what I'm saying?
I like
you
that.
You dream it till you real life it. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean? And so, but it's the same thing, though. But I know how people like to, but
it
I just.
It gives a different connotation.
It does. When you
fake
dream
it till you make it feels a little bit day.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
It feels
a little bit inauthentic.
Yeah. You know, I think sinister vibes sell. People want to see the train crash versus then the beautiful takeoff. But when you get to this side of it, when you get to the made it side, that's how it's going to do it. Like when it's the ambition side of what you want to do, it's the fake it till you make it. But then when you're on the other side, you look back and say, actually, I just dreamed it till I realized
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. And that's literally what it is. But I wanna go back to the beginning of the journey.
Okay.
I wanna go back to the beginning of the journey. So you're from Tennessee.
Yeah.
You decide that you're gonna go into Hollywood.
Yeah.
You decide that you're gonna go and make movies.
Mm-hmm.
You'd go into an environment, you don't know anybody.
Mm-hmm.
We typically call that delusion. But you went out there And so far, the journey's been going for you. Tell me, what was your initial inspiration going into Hollywood? What did you want to achieve?
Yeah, I didn't want to originally make a movie.
Right.
Maybe it was in my subconscious.
Right.
Like, as a kid, I knew I wanted to be entertainment, right? And I remember vividly, and I thought every kid did this, but apparently they don't. Maybe you did. I remember when people may be like, yo, what do you want to be as a kid? And, you know, some people are just, you know, playing basketball, pretending to be like mic commercials,
you know what I'm saying?
Or, you know, for me, and I play sports and everything, but for me, I vividly remember I was had the kitchen spoon, and I would be in the mirror rehearsing my speech. And one day my mom said, what are you practicing? And I was practicing my Grammy or Oscar winning speech. I was like, I'm gonna thank God, I'm gonna thank my mom.
Yep.
And to me that seemed very normal. Like,
absolutely,
as normal as you would be practicing.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Like running up and down the field. Like I'm practicing with whatever gonna say what I
hey,
witness.
Listen, you know? I don't even mean to interrupt you there, but you know, this is one of the things that we lose as we grow up.
Yeah.
Because you know, when we're children, we know we have an innate knowledge that what we practice in front of the mirror is what we're going to create.
100%.
Right? We know that subconsciously. This has been wired into our DNA. But as we get older, we start to move away from that because we become so 4D, this 3D action oriented, that we begin to forget. We actually start to forget internally that there is actually a process to creation, and it starts from the inside. It
100%.
Starts from not the action over here.
Yeah.
The action over here is simply to put together what has already been created internally.
Yeah, 100%. And that's we speak my language. I'm sorry. Is the mic okay?
Because the mic is fine.
Okay,
the mic
okay,
is fine.
Cool.
Keep going. You can bring it closer if you want.
Oh, that's fine.
You know, feel free.
So that's probably like the earliest, maybe, and I'm like 8 when this is happening.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I knew I wanted to be in entertainment. And, you know, when you're living in middle America, you don't live in New York or L.A., these things seem like a far-fetched ambition or could be sort of lofty. And what really happens is people are afraid to actually make that announcement that that's what they want to do,
yeah,
just because of the ridicule that you may get or receive, oh, that's so unrealistic.
Yeah.
And so I try to pick, like, maybe a lot of people do this, like an adjacent business. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, I'm going to be like a manager, or I'll be like a person in marketing, or I'll be an A&R. So what it wound me doing is I've always been a serial entrepreneur. I started off as a DJ and party promoter at like age 15. And, you know, what I thought I was going to do was, you know, either be in nightlife and own a whole bunch of nightclubs or go run a record label. And so I just knew I wanted to be a hip hoppreneur.
Got it.
Right. And so I wound up, when I was fairly young, a lot of people would see me. So my origin is originally as a DJ.
Got it.
So when I would DJ, even at a young age, you know, 1,500, 2,000 people would consistently come support me.
Nice.
Then I remember when I went to college, I went to Tennessee.
And this was in South, in Tennessee?
Yes, okay. Yes. So I went to HBCU, I went to Tennessee State, and I opened up a nightclub when I was like 21.
Okay.
And this was like the first big 10,000 square foot cabanas and sparklers on bottles. Like, this is our first ultra nightclub sort of in that area. And I was breaking a lot of hip-hop artists. A lot of hip-hop artists would, record labels started to send me. Like, I remember working with Chris Brown when he was 16.
Amazing.
Trey Songz early on. It was just funny. I saw that Terrence J was out here in Dubai.
Yeah, yeah.
But 15 years ago, I remember him and Roxy coming to my nightclub. So I remember, and I went to Stephen Hill at BET, and I was telling him, I was like, you know, this was when Twitter first hit, or when Facebook really first hit, and we broke this song called Swag Surfing. And how we did it was, I remember these guys were still in high school, and we had so many people from Atlanta who were coming up, because Atlanta was hot back then. It was coming up saying, yo, this is what's hot in Atlanta. And then us working at the radio station in college, we would, you know, have the whole audience of 10,000 students to play whatever we wanted to play. And so we make these coalitions amongst all the HBCU DJs and party promoters. And they're like, this is what's going to be hot that we're going to push. But really what we were doing, we were building up these DJ pools to break these records. And then I was noticing records that we were breaking in college next week they were on 106 and Park. That's when that show was big.
Yeah.
And so I remember going to LA, and it was this huge, this is sort of what drove me to Hollywood, long story short. There would be this huge disconnect of what was going on in culture on the ground level and then what these executives were doing in the office. You're right. And I was like, yo, how do I bridge this gap? Because I'm on the ground. Now, no one else in college is like hopping on a plane and flying to LA and hunting down, you know, these executives. But I was, you know what I'm saying? Like, I would hop on a plane, I would fly to LA 3 or 4 times a year, and I'll go knock on Stephen Hill's office, you know what I'm saying? I'll go find,
That's bold. Yeah,
you know what I mean? And I remember we, like, big shout out to Stephen Hill, but like we've gone through our journey, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. He's like, yo, this kid is crazy, you know what I'm saying?
No, for real.
But because I was saying, like, you got to give some young people an opportunity. You got to put us in position to really have a voice.
Yeah.
And so that sort of got me on this path that it was possible for me to be a player in Hollywood. And then I started managing this group. And what wound up happening is now, mind you, this is like 15 to 22. So I've sort of done a stint already of things. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so when I start managing this one group, I get a call from Universal Republic, and a guy who knew me from when I was just throwing parties and owned a nightclub was like, yo, I remember this kid, and because he was from Nashville.
Got it.
And my man Naeem, and he was at became the VP at Universal Republic. And he was like, yo, I'm going to sign your group, you know, come to Hollywood. Let's do it. And so I pack up everything and I go to Hollywood. And now, mind you, I've been on this journey almost 10 years already. So everyone's expecting, like, of course, you know what I'm saying? Like, back where I'm from, they're like, oh, yeah, he would be like the next Puff or Russell or somebody that. Yeah. So, man, when I get there, day one, the first meeting goes great. And it's so funny. I remember we sitting in the office, the first meeting's going great. Around that time, it was like just about to sign Ariana Grande, or just signed her maybe the week before. Like, Republic was new.
Dope.
And they had Lorde, they had Ariana Grande, and we were the first like hip hop act. I don't even think, maybe they just signed Weeknd or negotiating.
What was the group called?
It was this artist called Austin Martin. And he was 100%. He could produce, he could write. Yeah. I mean, he's gone on and done several deals now, but you know, I remember the first time I heard his music, I was like, bro, I'm going to get you a record deal. I'm going to drop everything and go get you a record deal. And we were at, actually, I heard his music at Obama's inauguration. I was in D.C. for Obama's inauguration, and I heard this music that was so good.
You were getting about. You were getting about.
I was getting around. Moving around at this point, you know. And I said, yo, I'm getting you a record deal. Because I already had the, I felt I had the connections in Hollywood. Mind you, I had been going a lot. Even though I'm still not living in L.A. yet, I have been going now since I started going when I was like a teenager. So I've been going out there a lot. So when I find him, I'm like, okay, I'm going to get you a record deal. Boom, fast forward. My guy from Universal calls me, says, yo, I'm going to sign him. Everybody come to L.A. And then I remember I'm sitting in this meeting, and everything is going great. He said, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to meet later on this night at the studio. It's one other guy I want you to meet. He's going to love you, man. You're his type of guy. And so, typical Hollywood story, when we take our intermission, right, the attorneys are looking over what they're looking over. I'm at the Ferrari dealership. You know what I'm saying? I'm at the Ferrari dealership.
Man's so, ready to spend the piece that hasn't been coming yet.
So, I mean, I don't know how much the deal was supposed to be. I think the deal was supposed to be for like maybe like a penny over $1 million. I have spent the whole $1 million. I don't know how we gonna shoot videos. I don't know how we gonna go to it, cause this whole event is gone. You know what I'm saying? So I don't went to the. I'm picking out the bubble. They're like, you want the bubble B yellow Ferrari, or you want the cherry red? I'm like, I'm more of a cherry red guy, but you know. And so the whole thing, I'm at the Wilshire corridor trying to pick out the condos. I'm looking at the drapes. I'm like, I don't know if that's like the right ceiling height. I don't know. You know.
Damn.
So then we go, because mind you, I have been working on this for 10 years.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So when we go back to the meeting, when we go back to the next meeting, brings in this guy, and this is all public information, so I don't mind mentioning names, but he brings in this guy, Devon Stevenson. And Devon worked, he was a huge A&R out of Atlanta. I think he discovered Akon.
Okay.
And he discovered, he worked with Pebbles a lot in L.A. Reid, Outkast. He had done some, he had done some big things. And so, you know, Devon's a fly guy, and so I guess, you know, sometimes I can have that, especially back then.
Yeah.
I would have that personality of either you really like me or you, I may not be your cup of tea.
Right, right.
And now I can disguise it more. So the maturity has taught me.
Absolutely. Discernment. I just
listen first. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Well, back then I was so excited and just happy, and it really was passion.
Yeah.
And I don't think dude was just really feeling it. And this meeting like literally goes from like a 10 to a 1, and I see this deal promise sort of get thrown up and balled up and thrown in the trash. And the next day, I mean, I really have two options. It's like go back home. Everyone else is leaving. The artist is going back home. Our team is going back home.
Yeah.
Or it's like you could go back home or you could stay and figure it out. And, and I decided to stay. And so the next day was the beginning of where we are today, beginning of the next phase of my life.
My goodness. Do you know what? There's a few lessons in there that I don't want to brush over. Number one, even before you had actually moved to Hollywood, you were traveling. You went to D.C. to Obama's inauguration. You'd been coming back and forth to Hollywood. And that's one of the things that I talk a lot about, which is networking. You've got to position. We say that your network is your net worth, right?
100%.
You've got to intentionally position yourself in spaces where you can be seen. Right. A lot of people have dreams, but they're still staying in their bedroom.
Yeah.
Right. I remember I dropped out of medical school at 19, and literally everybody in my address book at that time who I'd went to school, who I'd gone to college with, I literally dropped everybody overnight because I'm like, you guys don't get the vision of where I'm trying to go. When I dropped out of med school, everybody was telling me I'm about to ruin my life. And that was possible.
Yeah.
Right. But I had a vision. I had a dream. I wanted to start businesses. I wanted to go and work for myself. And nobody was understanding that vision. In order for me to protect that seed, I dropped everybody. In dropping everybody meant that I had no friends. I had no network. I had nobody, literally.
Yeah.
And I would wake up and I would go into the hotels in central London and I'd literally sit there. If all I can afford is a can of Coke all day, I'm still going to meet somebody. I'll overhear a conversation happening. I'll meet somebody.
Yeah.
So I was putting myself in positions to be heard and seen. So the networking, I don't know if you realize what you were doing back then, but this is literally what you were doing, putting yourself in positions where you can be seen. And then most importantly, and this is the first thing that I don't want to, this is another important thing that I don't want to brush over, which is you experience your first major rejection.
Yeah.
Right? The journey to success, the journey to accomplishing any dream is going to be riddled with no's, right? My question I always tell people is the difference between people who are successful versus those who are not is that how many times can you hear no? How many times can you be rejected and still maintain the same level of enthusiasm in your dream?
That's the trick.
And keep going forward?
That's the trick.
So, right, this is it. So you've gone here, you've been called in, all guns blazing, excitement, and then literally overnight,
boom,
back to zero.
Yeah, and I always, you know, hindsight's 2020, but in retrospect, I remember I texted Devon. No, we were with Akon at a party at Tyrese's house years ago, and I said, "Man, thank you so much for not doing that deal. You know, it changed my life forever." And he smiled. You know, it sort of was like, "I hear you." You know, he didn't know that where we are today was even coming, but
right.
You know, and this never would have happened if I would have done that deal.
The next day you woke up, the deal's gone. What now? What's going through your mind?
So this will realize, like, I'd done a lot of foundation. So if I could just backtrack a little bit, When I was 18, the first time I ever went to Hollywood, mind you, I lose a deal at 23. Yeah. So I'm just going back a little bit to give you some more context. Yeah. When you said the networking, what I call that is the proximity to success. See, if you're not in the proximity, mm-hmm. I always tell people, why go to Hollywood get in movies? Because they're not looking for movie stars in Arkansas.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
You know what? You can't be around water and not get wet.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So the proximity of success. So I understood that very early on. Another thing that I did because I understood that was it got to a point where my parents, they practiced medicine. And, you know, your son comes in and he tells you he's going to be the next Russell Simmons. You know, it just...
Like far-fetched
a little bit.
Yeah,
exactly. You know what I mean? But we love you, son. But, you know, don't quit your day job, right?
Yeah.
But I was like, I know you don't probably believe that this is a reality. And, you know, you guys are sort of going with my party promotions company. But I don't think I want to go to college because I'm like, none of the people who I see or are successful have gone that route. And they were like, you know, well, this is sort of where we draw the line. So if you don't want to go to college, that's fine. But, you know, we're going to cut you off. If you don't go to college, Army got to do something. And so I'm not sure if they were literally going to do that or that was just sort of them sort of, you know, putting down that their poker the face. But yeah, but I took it very literally. So I said, okay, I'm cool with you cutting me off, but you have to give me an opportunity to make my dreams come true. And they're like, what do you mean? I said, I need to go to New York for or L.A. for one weekend before I graduate high school and try to figure this out. And so I remember I flew to L.A. It was like spring of my senior year, and it was like the senior skip days, so it was like a three-day weekend. I flew to L.A., and I flew to L.A. because I knew that there was the NAACP Image Awards happening. And then, so when I went, I was able to finagle my way to the award show, and I met a whole bunch of people. And I remember the only young people who were there were like me, Michael B. Jordan, and Kyla Pratt. It is a sort of running joke we have. And my other friend, Michael's partner, Renee Spellman. And we sort of, all the young people were hanging together. And I remember from there, it was relationships I made that weekend that sort of carried on. And so every year I would go back. Saying that to say that when I lose the deal, L.A. wasn't foreign to me. I had been coming out here for a minute. You get what I'm trying to say? Yeah. So I remember when I was 20 years old. Now, mind you, that happens. That story is, right? is I lose the deal at 23. I'm just wanted to give you a proper build up.
Yeah.
They gave me the confidence to do what I'm about to say next. Yes. You know what I'm saying? This is what I'm doing right here. Because I don't want to be a bad example and just tell kids, yo, man, just stop everything and move to Bangkok and go become an emperor. You know what I'm saying? like you know what I mean? Like there was some strategy. Yeah, there was some strategy into this. You know what I'm saying? And saying that to say, okay, boom. Let me just run through this part. Okay. That happens at 18, go meet a group of people. Now, about 20, I'm going to LA so much, I'm dating a woman who's on a popular TV show. So I was in college. I would be in my dorm room and be like, yo, that's my girlfriend. And they'd be like, stop lying. And I was like, no, this is my girlfriend. I'm telling y'all. Right? And she was a popular actress. And she was like 20 years older than me. She's like 20 years older than me on a hit TV show. And it all sort of.
I want to know who this is.
I'll tell y'all, Kara, for sure. And so on a hit TV show, and I'm 20. And I'm flying out to L.A. But mind you, I'm throwing parties, so I got a little bit of money.
Yeah.
I'm flying out to L.A. And then one day, she was shooting a movie in Atlanta and was like, Nash is by Atlanta, right? And I was throwing this party for a guy who was running for mayor. And she came up to the gala. I was throwing the cocktail party. Yeah. And everyone was like, that motherfucker told me. That guy's telling the truth. You know what I'm saying? So, so boom. So now, mind you, that's 20. 2023, I lose the deal. But that's just to let you know how much I'm already moving
involved.
In LA.
Yes.
I'm moving like that out there. You know what I'm saying? Yes. By this point, like me and the Harveys are really tight because Margie's from Memphis. And I've been known Lori since she was.
I saw a video of you, of Steve Harvey telling
you
wanted to date my daughter, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm coming out to LA. I'm running around with them. You know what I mean? Boom.
Yeah.
All right. I lose the deal. Go back home, use strategy and the connections I've already had built over all these years. So when I lost the deal, this guy was like, I told him when he was saying, man, the artist, he cool, but he needs some work. I'm like, man, don't worry about the artist, man. I got all that. Like, you really investing into me and I'm going to make everything pop because I'm that guy. You know what I'm saying? He's like.
Confidence in $1,000 trillion.
Because mind you, the other executive has already told me that everything is good to go.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So,
right,
boom. Right. I was like, okay. The dude was like, oh, I've never heard of you. I remember vividly, he was like, oh, that's cool, but I've never heard of you.
Yeah.
And I when I woke up that day, what's resonating in my mind is that no one at any level of importance will ever be able to say, I've never heard of you. And so my only goal was that next day was I will become the most known figure in Hollywood.
Shit, then.
That was my number one goal. I didn't know I was gonna make a movie. I didn't know even when my next record deal was coming.
Right.
But I knew in order to do anything in this town, I needed to become a household name within this town.
Build a brand. You gotta solidify your brand.
That's it. I was like, I gotta build this brand. And so there's a few things that I did the next day. Spoiler alert. There's a few things I did the next day. One, I couldn't sleep. And I, luckily, we'll probably say worry about sleeping right now. I'm at my cousin's house. My cousin had an apartment about half the size of this studio, literally. Right. And I'm sleeping like this is like my little bedroom, this cot here. And I couldn't sleep. I wake up sort of restless. And I was like, what is it in L.A. that everyone actually needs to be successful? Because it seems like a lot of people here have financial resources. A lot of people are rich in L.A. But I know a lot of rich people who have still been auditioning for 20 years or still been trying to get a record deal for 20 years. Right. And really what it is, the two most valuable currencies in L.A., access and information.
Bro, those are the two most valuable assets in the world.
In the world. That's what I'm discovering. That's what I'm discovering. Absolutely. You know, and so, because if I have the information, the information is powerful.
You're studying your craft, which I absolutely appreciate. You're studying the industry. So as you're getting around into these things, it looks like you're just canoodling your way into spaces.
Yeah.
But the whole time you're learning.
100%.
Because this is valuable information that's going to be able to inform your next steps.
100%.
And whether they go well or not.
100%.
I hear that.
And so, to your point, at 5 a.m, I woke up and I was like, okay, I need this access and information. Because my thing, I was thinking, okay, how does Oprah Winfrey know what is she going to do today? And it seems like whoever's telling Oprah what she's going to do today, it must be the person who's telling Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks too, because the next day they're all in the same place.
Right.
So this is what was coming to me. Okay. I was like, yo, there must be a system of information, a correspondence of an agenda of what's going on that's directing all of pop culture.
Right.
Because we're receiving the information tomorrow in People magazine. Well, but no one knew the day before. This was going to take
Absolutely.
Place. And so I became keen on like, how do I crack that system? And then the other thing was, a conversation is only as good as what we're talking about. So I need some type of relevance to make people want to call me back.
Value.
You know, and so since I came from nightlife, to seem like the lowest hanging fruit would have been hospitality. So I was like, yo, I'm going to throw a dinner party in 30 days and I'm going to get every big person in this town to come to this dinner party in 30 days. And I didn't have a lot of, I had like $1,500 to my name, by the way. But I knew that's what needed to happen. And then the next thing I was going to do was I needed a buffer and validation. So, you know, I used to watch all these stories about Hollywood and people like, you know, Jim Carrey be like, yeah, call my people. Or Eddie Murphy be like, yeah, call my people, get up. So I needed these people, whoever these people was.
Who's they?
You know what I'm saying? I needed they to represent me.
Right.
And so I didn't have like an agent or a manager, but I've always been pretty good at graphics. And so I created this fictitious agency to represent me called the Cohen Company. And it was ran by this middle-aged Jewish guy named J.V. Cohen. And we had all, and if you went to our team, we had like Stephanie Swartz, you know what I'm saying?
Was this real or was this you made this up?
It was real as the internet, you know what I mean? Okay. It was tangible.
Well, perception is everything.
Yeah, it was tangible. Yeah. You could go to the website, you had a Twitter account, you know.
God damn.
But I really just needed.
These people existed or no?
No, these are just avatars that I created. So, okay. Mind you, I did all of this. By now, it's like 10 o'clock the next day. So from 5 a.m. to 10 a.m. the next day, you know, I had a party planned.
Success loves speed.
You know, and then I had this company. Okay. So I created, the party was going to be called the Secret Dinner Society.
Okay.
The Secret Dinner Society presented by Moët & Hennessy, which I hadn't talked to them yet. I just put together the invite. And then I made these two websites, and then I put on a suit and I went to Beverly Hills.
Listen, while you're listening, before you do all of this, you could get sued. Okay? So,
yes. You know, this is definitely an do execute now and apologize later.
Right.
You know, jeez, which is risky.
Right.
And so once I did that, you know, I went to Beverly Hills, still day two, and I just went to the Beverly Hills Polo Lounge, and I was sort of just ear hustling, grabbed a $40 coffee, and I sort of just ear hustled. And I realized that if I got to the Beverly Hills Hotel before 9 o'clock and I went to either the Polo Lounge or the Fountain Room, everyone in this town who I needed to know would be there. it was literally Spielberg is walking out, Ron Burkle, who we mentioned earlier, Basil would come here all the time, but you got to be there before 9 o'clock. Now, the mistake that I made on day two was I had on a suit, okay? And I realized no one had on a suit because no one's going to work. Absolutely. Everyone just left jogging, cycling, tennis. So the next day, my third day, when I showed up at 8 in the morning, I went to the Nike store and I bought my Nike tights. I got the Nike tights, you know what I'm saying?
You're learning quickly.
Yes, yes, I got my tennis racket and everything, you know what I mean? And so, boom, day three, I'm in there. And then one time I just got hungry. It's like day three, I believe, I got hungry. And I was like, man, I don't want to keep buying these $40 coffees, but I want to stay in the proximity of success. And I realized, like, yo, there's a red carpet event going on every day in this town. So I just drove around town until I saw a red carpet. And I saw, now you may be asking yourself, how did I know it was going to be a red carpet? Well, I'm in hospitality.
Right.
So I saw the production trucks and I saw this company, Town & Country, they do all the events.
Yeah.
So I said, yo, it's probably a red carpet near. So from then I just put on I threw on a tuxedo and went onto the red carpet, and so the journey began. Yeah. God.
I have so many questions. Yeah. And honestly, I suppose if I want to dissect every bit of the journey, we'll be here all day.
We'll be here for a minute.
Because
bro.
It's an incredible journey. But fast forward now,
you
have a movie produced, Who Is Gatsby Randolph?
Yeah.
And this movie essentially documents this
journey
over the last 8 years. With you meeting people and all of this stuff and trying to do this thing that you've set out now that you're going to do in Hollywood.
Yeah, let me get to there. So from the story I just told on that third day, the journey only captures 1 year. So the whole movie, that's to let you know how fast it was moving. So I go from homeless, don't know what to do, and the climax scene of this movie is Oscar night. I have an Oscar in my hand. I'm being interviewed by BBC on an Oscar win.
Yeah.
Okay. So that lets you know how much happened in 1 year. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, halfway through the story and in between halfway through the story is first 30 days, I become very popular. 3 months in, I'm a household name. I start an actual agency where I'm making talent very, very popular.
That's crazy. You know what I'm saying? So literally from the dreaming to now the realization.
And then I become financially stable. But when people say, well, you know, Gatsby, how'd you do this? You know, you're like,
let me ask you this.
Okay.
Before you went to Hollywood, did you call yourself Gatsby? Or did that happen?
No, that happened there. Let's address that real quick. Day two, I turned into Gatsby Randolph.
Hey.
And what it really was is Gatsby Randolph is the personification of bits and pieces of every Hollywood moment that actually inspired Kobe Randolph's imagination. Yeah. So as a kid, I'm watching TV. It's me, right? So as a kid, I'm watching TV. And I'm seeing Richard Pryor, I'm seeing Eddie Murphy, but I'm seeing, like, I really like how smooth Frank Sinatra is. And then I'm really getting influences of music from, like, Marvin Gaye, from my parents playing it.
Yeah.
But then when I got to Hollywood, you know, I met some of these people, and I fell in love with their characters, but I didn't know them. And I realized, like, George Clooney is not really Danny Ocean, you know what I mean? But but what if Danny Ocean really existed?
Right.
And so I got into the mindset of, yo, I'm going to create the ultimate Hollywood figure. And then this character will be Gatsby Randolph. So that's how we got that. Yeah.
Man, the level of thought and strategic planning that went into creating this persona and now this career, it's absolutely, I hope people, first of all, you need to go out there and watch this movie.
Yes.
Who is Gatsby Randolph? Before I even ask the next question, where can people find this?
Man. Friday, February 16th,
yep.
Depending on when this airs. Go to Dubai Malls.
Dubai Malls.
Real cinemas.
Yeah.
Any real cinemas, you're going to see who is Gatsby Randolph. And what's special about this is that you can watch the movie on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Or there's other streaming sites.
So if they're outside of Dubai, if you're in UK, Africa, you can still watch it.
You can still watch it streaming right now.
On Prime.
But this is the first theatrical release of the film. Yeah. And it's special because this is the world's most exclusive movie. You will not see this cast of cameos in any
movie. I mean, I gave a bit of a rundown in the beginning, but tell me who's in this
yeah,
movie.
So, and I forget sometimes. I see a movie like, oh my gosh, I forgot about Chris Tucker.
Right.
But real quick, Jimmy Kimmel, Jay-Z, Beyonce, Vince Vaughn, P. Diddy, Tom Hanks, Reese Witherspoon, Kate Beckinsale, Steven Spielberg, Quentin Tarantino, Nicole from the Pussycat Dolls. Sorry, I forgot your last
Nicole Scherzinger.
Yeah, Rosario Dawson, Jamie Foxx. Oh my gosh, I know I'm forgetting some people. Steve Harvey, Chris Tucker, Coach K from QC, and then the list just starts going on and on.
For me, you know, this podcast for me is, I like it to be a bit of a manual for life where people can literally listen, and at the end of every podcast, they know what to do in some situation in their lives. For the dreamers out there, for the people who have a dream, for the people who want to come up and do something and create something, who don't have the level of confidence of Gatsby Randolph, who don't maybe not have the resources to be able to canoodle their way into those places. What do you want this movie? What do you want your journey? If you could boil it down to 3 or 5 lessons, what do you want people to take away from your journey and this movie?
Man, the number one thing about this journey is what I realized is in this journey and lesson of life that I've had experience executing this is the power is in you.
Yeah.
And I think oftentimes we're just searching for so much validation. And I think
external of ourselves,
you know, the full circle narrative of this is in the beginning, just like you introduced me, it's, oh my gosh, it's the most ultimate fake it till you make it story. Now, as I sit on this side of the coin, and now that we're here and the movie's going in theaters, then I ask myself, now that I've completed every task, I say, you know, it really is a dream it till you real life it, because this has always been very clear to me.
Right.
But it took the rest of the world
to catch up
to what my vision was.
Come on now.
You get what I'm trying to say?
Absolutely.
So like, what was fake and what was real?
Absolutely.
You get what I'm trying to say? So that's what I'm saying.
For real.
So honestly, this kid came up to me one time, and I have like this cult following of people. And this kid came up to me one time in San Tropez and was like, oh my gosh, you're Gatsby Randolph. I got to take a selfie with you. I can't believe it is you. I've watched your movie on Amazon. And bro, you're the greatest. You're the greatest. I mean, you're the finesse god.
Yeah.
To him, he was giving me a compliment. He's like, you're the finesse guy. And I said, you want to really know the biggest finesse I've ever pulled off? He said, the movie. I said, nah, that's not the biggest finesse. It's just a movie. He said, well, what's the biggest finesse you've ever done? I said, the biggest finesse I've ever pulled off is making the world think it was a finesse.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
You get what I'm trying to say?
Come on now.
And so because what I'm trying to say is all these things that a person said, well, what has Gatsby done? Gatsby didn't do it. Well, actually, I have.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
right.
I'm in theaters on Friday.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Jay-Z and Beyonce is actually in my movie.
Right.
Like, actually, the ironic thing is, at the end of this movie, the climax scene is I'll walk into Vanity Fair's Oscar party with the Oscar that's not mine.
Yep.
But this actual movie has actually been up for an Oscar. You know what I'm saying? So I think that what God was doing with me personally was saying, yo, I'm going to use your journey and reverse engineer everything to really point out the fact that all these things that you want and your desires actually do come true in their real as long as you believe. The more you believe, the more that I'm going to show you.
Don't
the more you
preach.
Believe, the more that I'm going to show you.
Yep, yep.
You right? And so I think this is the biggest testament to that. So what I would say to any dreamer out there is to trust your vision. And it's your vision. Keep in mind, he ain't going to get it to the left or to the right because it ain't their vision. It's only your vision. And I think that, you know, faith is a muscle. The more we go, our risk tolerance gets bigger, our faith gets bigger, and then eventually we just hit our superhuman talent, our superhuman talent we all have. And so that's what I would say.
You know what? Oh, man. Such a great way to end this episode. I could go on forever, to be fair. But, you know, I always say that there's the special thing about your imagination, your subconscious. When you're imagining something, when you're dreaming something, your subconscious mind does not know the difference between what we call reality and what's the dream and what's the pictures of your mind. All it knows is, if I keep seeing this vision, this picture in this mind, I need to orchestrate it such that it becomes this outward reflection matches that inward imagination. And so whatever you believe, I love this Drake line says, you know, when you, how's it go? It says, you know, you've done something great when you are who you think.
When you are who you think you are.
And the reality is, whoever you continue to tell yourself in your mind that you are is who you show up in the world as. 100%. Is who, because everything is energy.
Yeah.
And whatever you, whatever pictures that you choose to solidify and cement out here, the rest of the world will begin to gravitate towards that. And this is the perfect, I love the fact that you said that the greatest finesse is me making the world believe that it was a finesse.
That's it.
Right? Because you always were this person.
Yeah.
You always were this great person. You always were who the fuck Gatsby Randolph is. It's just that the world, it took a minute for the world to catch up. The only difference is you documented the process.
Yeah.
To a certain degree, right?
Yeah.
And it's the most beautiful thing to see. I'm going to end on this note. I did a YouTube video. You can go search it up. 5 things I knew, I wish I knew before I turned 30. And one of the things I said in that video is that if I was talking to my 18-year-old, 19-year-old self who had just dropped out of med school and was feeling a little bit lost and uncertain in his space in the world, I would tell this guy that, look, take it easy, because everything that you're dreaming of is going to happen. Everything is happening, and it's, and just like that, your life is going to turn around. And everything that you said, all the Porsches and the Bentleys and the houses that I said that I wanted to buy, I've done it. I've lived in it.
Mm-hmm.
And now that it doesn't even matter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that I regret was not dreaming even bigger.
Yeah. I go there too.
Not that what I was actually dreaming would even happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the journey of life. That's literally the journey of life. Trust the journey. Trust your journey. Believe in your source. Do not allow the vision of what you want to create to depart from your mind. And it's only a matter of time before you realize that. Listen, bro.
Thanks for having me, bro.
You need to come back in 90 days.
I would love to.
To come back in 90 days, because there's so much more that I want to dive into. But I feel like this is a great introduction.
This is a great intro.
Yeah, this is a great introduction to your journey. And I can't wait to see what this movie does in the box offices. Obviously, we're trying to obviously work with you to get it even more externally, yes, and internationally into the world, so that the world can see and believe in this journey. But I love what you're representing. Keep doing your thing, man. And I can't wait to see what's next in the chapter of Gatsby Randolph.
Thank you, my brother.
Guys, thank you for tuning in. See you same time next time. All new episodes drops every Monday, available on all platforms.